Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 432. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here. We have our FDH senior editor, another one of my fellow original FDH Lounge dignitaries with us today for a great summertime tradition in the lounge. Yes, it is time once again for our 2014 NBA Draft Preview Show. And, of course, we will have this embedded, as always, in our draft guide, which you can find at fantasydrafthelp.com and the FDHLounge.com, Pro Hoops Draftology 2014. We've got a lot to be able to get into with Jason today, the fruit of a lot of his analysis and his work that he has done getting us ready for this moment, and that I have, frankly, as well. We'll be getting right to it now with Jason Jones, my man. How you doing today, Jake Jones?
Oh, not bad. A little basketball, a little World Cup, not too bad.
Yeah, a lot of interesting things swirling around, and the end of the NBA Finals not far behind us as we're doing this show. Really not far behind us at all. But looking to the future, and of course, the free agent class of 2014, this is one of those past-could-be-prologue kind of a deal situations here, because you've got guys that were in the big class of 2003 that are all front and center in Miami, all potentially able to opt out of their contracts. LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. Of course, the big three at the time of the 2003 draft actually excluded two of these guys. It was LeBron James. We tend to forget that Darko Milicic was one of the guys, and as well, Carmelo Anthony. So in terms of looking back at that draft, it really did have the superstar power, even if two of the three guys haven't quite materialized. And Carmelo's probably had, probably a Hall of Fame career out of that, and will continue to, even if he doesn't go down as being a winner, quite frankly. But what do you think of this year's draft on a big picture level as compared to 2003, 1992, 1984, some of the banner years in history that people like to cite?
Well, I think most people are going to say that 2003, at least, you know, the younger kids, are going to say that 2003 was the best draft class we've ever seen. And I think you have to qualify that by saying it was the best draft class through, say, 40 picks. It's been a long time since we've had a really deep draft that goes the spectrum of both rounds. I'm actually more of a fan of the 92 draft, but if we're using 2003 as sort of the benchmark where you had guys like Bosh and Wade that weren't in the top three, and you even had some guys later on in that first round that not only became absolute starters, but also became more than that. So if we're comparing those two, that draft to this draft, I really think it's apples and oranges, and that's me being real polite. The interesting thing about this particular draft is I think you have what you're starting to see generally is that we've got two or three guys in the top three that are no doubt eventual starters, probably in their rookie season, with one guy sort of leading the pack. So if you're in that top three, you should be happy because you're going to get a guy that's going to contribute big minutes probably sooner rather than later, and he's probably going to be a cornerstone of your franchise. Maybe not the cornerstone, but maybe one of them. And I think that you and I are probably in agreement that Andrew Wiggins is on the top tier all by himself, and then you've got Jabari Parker and Julius Randle sort of fighting out for who's number two and who's number three. And then there's a break. Now, most people would have you believe that it's a big break and that the number four guy is considerably worse off. In my opinion, that number four guy's got to be Joel Embiid from Kansas. Big guy, prototype center, that a lot of people think could go as high as number one. If that happens, I'm going to scream at my TV. But that's a discussion for another day. But then after that, You've got your first international player probably coming off in the next couple picks in Exum. You've got Vonley, Marcus Smart, Aaron Gordon, Gary Harris, Stauskas. You've got some names in there. Here's the catch, though. They're not all going in the top 10. And here's where I think this draft may prove to be deeper in the end than we might think, is because I think there's going to be some guys sprinkled in there that are going to go, you know, 8 or 12 or whatever, that are going to push guys down. So we're going to see guys come off the board into the early 20s and think, how is that guy still available? And the reason is I think there's going to be some reaches. So although I think the 2003 draft had a lot more high-end star power, because there's at minimum five guys in that draft class that are probably Hall of Famers. And with that said, I don't know that there's more than two or three in this draft class, and I think that's being optimistic. So if we're comparing the two, I think it's similar in that you're going to have really good players available later than you think, but by no means, by no stretch of the imagination, do I think the 2014 draft will be able to hold a candle to the 2003 draft as far as elite star power.
In light of that, I've got a historical note I want to hit, but just real quick, I want to circle back to something you said there. If you could see Embiid possibly going 4, who do you see cracking the top 3? Because the conventional wisdom is Andrew Wiggins, Joel Embiid, Jabari Parker, in whatever order. Is it Julius Randle that you could see sneaking in there?
No. When I say top 4, I'm merely looking at them as prospects, not mock drafting it. I'm not even considering what teams are where. I would say that if we're just looking, you know, in a vacuum, the absolute value of their talent, then, yeah, I would say that Jabari Parker and Julius Randle are ahead of Embiid, just based on all complete talent. Now, we start factoring in who the teams are, that's a different story. There's no way on earth I think Julius Randle goes in the top 3.
Right. Good point. And good of you to point that out there. The funny thing is, if you think that this draft may not stack up to the 2003 draft, and this is what I found in the course of doing some of the research for our draft guide this year, then you really won't stack it up there with some of the ones that went before that. Here are some of the best draft classes before 2003. And again, I think we would agree that this class, although it blows away the garbage classes of recent years, doesn't come anywhere close. 1960, Big O, Jerry West. You got Lenny Wilkins in there. You got 1970, Pistol Pete, Tiny Archibald, Dan Issel, Dave Collins, Rudy T. That one might be my favorite. 1974, George Gervin, Bill Walton, Jamal Wilkes, Bobby Jones. 1976, Alex English, Adrian Dantley, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson. 1984, it's famous, of course, for Michael Jordan, Hakeem Olajuwon, John Stockton, Charles Barkley. 85, I guess I quite didn't realize had some of the guys in it, but when you look at it, it's impressive. Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin, Joe Dumars, Detlef Schrempf. That's a real depth one there. 87 as well. That's one that kind of gets slept on. David Robinson, Scottie Pippen, Reggie Miller, Kevin Johnson, Reggie Lewis, and Horace Grant. 92, Shaq, Alonzo Mourning, Latrell Sprewell. 96, Kobe, Ray Allen, Steve Nash, and AI. So it's got a lot to live up to when we're throwing out some of the classes previously there. So maybe myself and some of the people have been getting a little carried away with the hyperbole when we're saying great class. Those are great classes.
Yeah, now, just to allow for some sort of spectrum here, perception being what it is, you mentioned, when we talk about 2003, you mentioned Darko, which was arguably one of the biggest draft busts that I can think of, maybe only to Greg Oden, as sad as that is. But LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, those are the big names. But you still had, you know, Chris Kaman, who was a double-double for a long time. T.J. Ford was supposed to be very good. You had some names in there, but I think 2003 needs to be remembered as maybe the top five players in that draft class are remarkable, but it really wasn't deep. It wasn't – I don't even think 2003 deserves to – with those 1992 and 84 and even the 60s and 70s that you mentioned.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised to find out how concentrated some of those classes were when I was going back and when I was doing research. And the situation, again, the headline for this year's draft is that for the third time in 4 years, the one thing that the Cavs have done very well since LeBron left in 2010 is win draft lotteries. In 2011, it was a prize worth having. In 2014, a prize worth having. And that's an understatement in both instances. 2013, not so much. But 2011, Kyrie Irving, 2014. We'll talk about this in a moment here. God willing, Andrew Wiggins. But a pick that, again, there is no excuse for it not to be a franchise player and somebody that can carry you to great things, barring injury and any of the other variables that can come up. 2013, the situation being, again, they muffed the pick, and I think at the time we all went, what the hell did you do? By the same token, there were no picks there that excited me. I remember thinking at the time, the guy I liked the most was Ben Mclemore, who I'll admit didn't set the world on fire this past year, albeit it's hard to do it in Sacramento because that's like the Vietnam of the NBA for setting rotations. It's just young guys getting thrown in there, getting lost. I think in all fairness, we'll never see the best of Ben Mclemore as long as he's there, but there were no good options. There really weren't. The fact that people were talking up Nerlens Noel as though he were the second coming of Hakeem. No, we're seeing potentially the second coming of Hakeem, assuming we haven't already seen it in the last couple of years with the unibrow down there in New Orleans. We may be seeing it here with Joel Embiid if he can stay healthy, and that is, of course, the big question hanging over this. What I try not to be a mark about any of this, Jason, but it's really hard for me personally. Again, I'm a lifelong Cavs fan. You're a Cavs fan. So we're both personally invested in what happens at the top of the draft here. We let our biases out there on the FDH Lounge, and we try not to let it cloud us, but we acknowledge them. We're more honest, I think, than some people. I'm actually getting mad. I'm getting angry at the nitpicking that I'm seeing. I saw an article, I think it was by Ryan Russillo, I think it was on Grantland, not to throw them under the bus, but I think that's where I saw it. And he was quoting NBA scouts anonymously, and they're picking these guys apart. Now, again, they were really picking Wiggins apart. And it's a thing where I just think it's intellectually dishonest to act like these guys are Anthony Bennett or like they're Nerlens Noel or any of the guys that we saw last year. Of course they have flaws. Of course they're a little bit more raw. It's not even like when the Cavs got LeBron James and he was, I'm not going to say a finished product, but you could already see his rookie year that he was going to have an impact. You take a guy like Wiggins, you may have to wait a year or two for him to really start to become the Wiggins he's going to be. Parker may be more of a finished product, but a lower ceiling. I think most people would kind of agree. Joel Embiid, maybe the biggest upside, the questions about the back. And, you know, big men have had these kind of questions. And the city of Cleveland is no stranger to that with Brad Doherty and with Zydrunas Ilgauskas, who did actually outgrow his problems, believe it or not. And that's a rare thing for a big man. But what do you think about that, Jason? Is there not a responsibility by the media out there that when you're talking about these guys, you can say, of course they have some flaws. These are the things that they need to work on. But we start with the big banner headline that these guys are super impact players that are capable of taking you to a championship.
I guess I'm just not seeking out as much of this stuff as you are, because, you're absolutely right. There's a sense of balance that needs to be applied. And, I had no problem, especially in last year's draft, when people looked at the field at this time of the year last year and said, you know, Oladipo had a really nice tournament run, but is he big enough, strong enough? Can he play the position, and which position is that? Zeller looked like a prototype. Otto Porter looked like he could slide in right away. But you're right. There's absolutely nobody in that draft class that you look at and says he's exceptional. There's not one guy that had some sort of physical gift that really makes you pick your jaw up off the floor. And at the end of the day, when we're talking about this draft class we're coming into now, with guys just ripping them apart and taking down every little detail, I have to believe that is a direct reflection of so many fans and some media people flying off the handle talking about how Wiggins is the next LeBron and this is going to be just like 2003, where you've got three guys who are going to come into the league and automatically become future Hall of Famers, and these guys are going to come in and turn their franchises around. That sort of far-swinging pendulum effect is going to come back the other way, and I think that's exactly what's happened here. Wiggins absolutely is special, okay? You put Wiggins in last year's draft class, he is far and away, without question, the number one player in that draft. You could argue the same thing is true for Randall as well as Parker. Maybe a little bit less Randall, but that's because I think he's kind of a tweener. But to the point, yes, people are going way too far extreme onto one side, and I think it's reactionary because so many people believe that, you know, when you see these highlight reels from high school and you see guys like Wiggins sort of look like LeBron did from his high school tape, yeah, that's fine, but these guys are going up against high school kids, and not all of which are going to go play college ball, much less ever get drafted. So, yes, they're going to look phenomenal. And then I think the gut reaction is to nitpick and really find every little hairline fracture in the chink of armor and blow it up into something that's massive and needs to be considered, because it's not. Wiggins absolutely is going to be a star. Where he ranks in the stardom, I don't know, but I think if you're looking at a team like a Cleveland who should be picking him, if they pick him, he automatically, rookie season, is number two probably to Kyrie Irving as far as where the ball goes. And then eventually maybe they become equals as far as, you know, their stardom or whatnot. But he's absolutely up there. And I would argue that you can probably find about 12 guys in this draft class that I am more excited about than anyone in last year's draft class, because everyone in last year's draft class had one significant problem. And one last point before we move on. I was all for Nerlens Noel for a while. But anybody that's referring to him as the next Olajuwon needs to be slapped in the face, because that guy is essentially Joakim Noah. He's long, he rebounds, he blocks shots, he has some offensive game, but he is nowhere near. I don't even think he's anywhere near some of the starters in the NBA now, and he definitely doesn't have a ceiling of Hakeem Olajuwon. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a pretty dumb take last year. And again, I have to say that one of the things I think that makes me, and I admit to being angry about this kind of analysis and the micro kind of, you know, poking through all of the flaws of the top three guys disproportionately, is I think it's a lot of the media following the lead of Bill Simmons' tantrum on lottery night. It's not fair to keep him as the top pick for the third time in 4 years. Well, first of all, again, as a lifelong Cleveland sports fan, don't anybody quote me on the topic of fairness. That's first and foremost. And from what happened 4 years ago and everything else, again, that's the last. You can fight us Cleveland sports fans on any ground you want. You will not win on life's not fair. You shouldn't even go there. But I just find that it's sort of like almost an anti-scientific, anti-rational point of view of, everyone is just so much in the mode of, it's not fair that Dan Gilbert gets his hands on another one of these guys, so let's conjure it up in our minds so that it's not so. Let's try and make it look like Dan Gilbert, well, he might have a real poor man's LeBron on his hands this time, emphasis on poor man's, as opposed to just calling it down the middle and saying, hey, there are three guys out there that are capable of some really, really astonishing things and carrying their teams deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, you say don't get me started on fairness. I say don't get me started on Bill Simmons. I might say something that's not family appropriate. I'll just sum it up by saying this. We all know through our history together that I am not bang the drum for ESPN guy. What on earth possessed them to think that it was a good idea to take an internet editorialist and put him on a pregame show? I think he's literally out for shock value almost all of the time. And although when it happened, when the lottery deal went down, I did kind of expect a little bit of a backlash, like, okay, this is getting ridiculous now. But I agree with you. Hey, that's how it falls. That's how it falls, and don't talk to me about what's fair. So throwing that aside, Bill Simmons. I mean, look, the lottery has always been what it is, and if people are reacting based on what Bill Simmons said, get out of my face. Because at the end of the day, last year, and maybe I'm being more optimistic for the front office and Dan Gilbert than some would be after last year's pick, I really thought when they started to say Anthony, I thought they were saying Alex Len, which was a guy I was actually very intrigued by. After I had some time to think about it, I thought, Bennett's not a bad pick because this draft class has nothing to offer at that number one spot. So I'm not as down on that pick as some people. And it's not like I don't perceive that the NBA is giving them a do-over or anything. I just think that's how the nature of the thing played out. And I think if they take Wiggins, I think if they take anybody outside of a point guard, because I like Kyrie Irving and I'd like to keep liking Kyrie Irving, I think if they pick anybody outside of the point guard position in that's projected to be a top five pick, I don't have a problem with it. With that said, it better be Andrew Wiggins.
Absolutely, I agree with you on that. And again, as far as it goes with Bill Simmons, my last word on that before we move on, again, I think, yeah, they did put him on there for shock value. He is somebody who, again, I understand, can be classified as at least something of a basketball expert. He wrote that excellent book of basketball. I just always chuckle on the subject of Bill Simmons because he had committed to come on this program, didn't follow through ultimately, but not before his book company sent me a free copy of the book. So I got a free $30 book, so even though Bill Simmons didn't come on our show, I still like to feel like I got over on him because it's a great book and I got it for free. So neener, Bill Simmons. But moving to some of the other topics here that we've got, when you get past the big three, I think this gets to something that I need to put out there about what we're doing. A little bit of a different approach this year with Pro Hoops Draftology 2014, and in reaction to the landscape of the NBA from the last couple of years, and I will let you explain this a little bit more as this was your decision. The guy who's kind of the consensus top four pick, at least at the moment, Dante Exum possibly going to Orlando. That's what a lot of people seem to think. That's where I got him in my latest mock draft. Kind of fitting in a way because this is a guy that people kind of project out if everything goes well as a Penny Hardaway prototype. A big shooting guard, a guy who can also play a lot of point, a guy who has a lot of point guard skills, and you could basically play in both spots there. But what we're doing this year, we are separating our rankings for the college players and for the international players on the thought that it really is just kind of too much of apples and oranges trying to compare them. We've seen in recent years the futility of trying to compare when guys play against international competition to the guys who played in college. And, quite frankly, there have been a lot of international guys, the majority of them who've gone high, who have not really made much of an impact in the NBA. So although Exum has played well against NBA talent and international competition, and I think college talent as well, that doesn't really give us enough of a read. So talk about that for a moment and our decision to separate out these guys and to rate them just against one another positionally rather than against the college players.
Well, I did a little workup a couple of weeks ago that you're familiar with, and I'll just get to the last line of it. We as basketball fans are inclined to believe that there's some Dirk Nowitzki lying in wait every single year. And when they keep drafting these international players, and drafting them high, and over time, I just got the feeling that there's not been much of a return on that gamble. So I went and did the homework on it, and the last line of this thought is there are six international players drafted since 1995, I think, that you would consider very, very good, if not great. Six out of 74. It is remarkable how bad the payoff is on international players. You make the argument that it has to do with playing the international game and what it's like when they have to play the NBA game. But whatever it is, I personally, and if you watch NBA TV enough, when they start doing the scouting reports, they got a guy, Fran something, that does their international
Frisella.
Stuff. Yeah, and
Fran
Frisella, this dude,
former Ohio University assistant head coach, by the way, the great Fran Frisella.
Well, you might not think so great when I say what I'm about to say. This dude is selling international players with such hyperbole that I'm surprised that people aren't automatically putting him number one every year. And if that's the way the scouting departments are working for the teams, then absolutely there's a problem. I mean, there was, I think it was Vesely a couple years ago. They were talking about this guy could be the greatest player in the NBA. Like, are you serious? LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, you know, throw out the names that are closest to your mind today. There's no way. There's no way. Because none of them play that well. Now, some of them have a little niche, a thing that they're good at. And every now and again, yes, you'll get a Tony Parker or a Dirk Nowitzki. But it is so few and far between that I wanted this time around to just maybe just experiment, separate the two groups, and see how that goes. If it's not well received, you know, we can always go back next year to doing it the way we've been doing it. But that was the idea, is that it's not like we're batting 50% here. I mean, we really are bad at projecting guys that go in the top 10 thinking they're going to be top 10 type players, and they never are. Matter of fact, the players that proved out to be top 10 players weren't taking the top 10, so maybe we should reevaluate exactly how high up the ladder we're taking. But with that said, there is this idea that Exum is unquestionable top 5 player. And if you're right, and if those experts are right, and he is sort of that Penny Hardaway, you know, almost point forward slash shooting guard that absolutely can bring up the ball every time, then maybe he's worth it. I don't know if that's your quote, that you're the one saying that, or you pulled that from someone else's piece, but if anybody wants to sway my opinion, all you got to do is drop Penny Hardaway, who probably was my favorite player until about 1999. So with that said, just let me throw out a couple things on Exum. He has a flat shot. His handles are good, as point guards go. He's long. He needs to put on a little bit of weight because I'm afraid the wind would knock him over. He's turnover prone, and in the most recent FIBA under 19 tournament where the United States team, which includes names like Peyton Smart, Fraser Robinson, went up against the Australian team. Listen to this byline. Only played 11 minutes. They were worried he had an ankle injury. 1-for-1 from the field, which was a dunk. 1-of-2 from three. No assists, no rebounds, and 4 turnovers. 4 turnovers in 11 minutes.
Yikes.
Now, look, he looks the part. You turn on the highlight film, he absolutely looks the part, and I'm sure at some point he's going to develop into a nice guard. Here's my thing, though. Exum looks like a tall Damian Lillard. Now, some might say that's phenomenal, and they're probably right. But Damian Lillard is a different animal. When he got drafted, we thought, he looks nice, but let's see what happens. He just turned out to have ice water in his veins and a hell of a competitor. But I'm saying stylistically, he looks more like Damian Lillard than he does, say, Chris Paul. So if you're looking at him as a point guard, he's really a combo that can do both. I'm just very skeptical that he's worth a top five pick, although the whole world seems to think that's the case.
Yeah, the Penny Hardaway comparison is pretty widely out there. And again, you know, as you said, you have Penny, an absolutely unbelievable player until, unfortunately, the knees went and kind of deprived him of a big second half of his career. But in terms of a guy who is a little bit similar as far as being a combo guard, if not exactly in terms of the skill set, the guy who would have been, I think, the consensus number one pick a year ago, you said that a lot of these guys, if they were out last year, would have been. This guy had a chance to be, and for whatever reason, passed it up, came back for his senior year. Think he regrets it because this was the wrong draft to try to be number one in. Marcus Smart, shooting guard at Oklahoma State, who may be projected possibly in some systems as a point guard. Temperament, of course, a question with him after the incident that he got into this year, which was kind of unfortunate with one of the fans during a game there. A guy who is just immensely talented, has a fairly polished offensive game, and somebody who I think is going to be big time at the next level. So talk about him a little bit. A guy who, again, I think clearly would have been the class of the draft last year, and we might even be speaking of it as a one-man draft as opposed to a zero-man draft had he come out. But a year later, a little bit lost in the shuffle, may make the top five, but that's not a guarantee.
I think, you know, unless there's a curveball, I think he's in there. Top five is tricky because we pretty much outlined that there are like four guys, without question, depending on who's picking where, that are going in that top four. And then you're looking at Marcus Smart. If for whatever reason, say, Boston doesn't think that they need a point guard, which they technically don't, unless there's something in the works there. And the Lakers probably need more of an impact player at a different position. So he could fall, but I still think he goes in the top 10. He's absolutely worth it if this incident you spoke of is not characteristic of anything. The one drawback is I think he kind of looks like a stocky Dwayne Wade, both in height and skill level. How much of him is going to be a straight-up point guard? And depending on what team he goes to, maybe if he goes to Boston, maybe they put him in there as the two with Rondo. So you could see how this could shake out. He's got some position flexibility. He does have point guard skills. I'm just curious to see, because I'm not a big Oklahoma State guy, so I don't know if the episode is characteristic or if that was just somebody pushed the wrong button at the wrong time. If that's the case, then I think absolutely he goes no lower than 8 to Sacramento.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And if that happens, Sacramento will be getting a bargain, which, again, they will probably blow and misuse him, as they've done with a lot of guys. And I just despair for guys when they go to Sacramento.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I never thought much of Jimmer Fredette's pro prospects, but going there was clearly the worst thing in the world. We're going to have to do a segment on the show one day on rotations and point out just how absolutely brutal Sacramento has been by historical standards in the last decade. The most intriguing position, I would say, when you're going past the top couple of guys, clearly small forward, you got Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker, okay. You've got center, which is a total one-man position with Joel Embiid because pretty much everybody else blows at that position. But what's intriguing is power forward. You got a lot of guys who could go in the top 10. You mentioned Julius Randle of Kentucky previously. What's kind of funny is it seems to be a consensus top three at the power forward position. You have one of these guys at number five, and it's at the position. It's very interesting because Ben Chu, our good friend, managing editor of that NBA LotteryPick.com, fellow 21st Century Media Alliance member, also not as huge of a believer in Noah Vonleh of Indiana. You have a number five on our rankings here. The two guys in between, number four, Cle Anthony Early of Wichita State, number three, Adrian Payne, Michigan State, and number two, Aaron Gordon at Arizona. It seems to be Randle, Gordon, Vonleh in that order or something like it on a lot of people's tongues, but you've got Payne and Early in there as well.
Yeah, Let me sort of back up a little bit. Power forward position is intriguing because, especially in this year's class, we don't have a prototype. We rarely get a prototype anymore. You don't get the Tim Duncans, the 6'10", 6'11", 240-plus with back-to-the-basket post-game, you get essentially small forwards who are bigger than they're supposed to be. So Parker, who's probably more of a small forward at 6'9", 240, Vonleh, 6'9", 247, Randle, 6'9", 250, and so on. The closest thing, I think, to a prototype is Adrian Payne. And I'll be honest with you, if I was a team in the early teens that really needed a power forward, I would reach on him. I really like Payne a lot. Now, to go to Vonleh, let me just say that since you and I spoke last, since the last time I updated this this worksheet, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion has risen on Vonleh, and I really like him a lot. I'm going to have to do an updated board before we set up the gear ready for the draft and everything. But I still think he's behind Parker. I still think he's behind Randall. Gordon, I think, again, is a small forward, playing power forward sometimes. But I would have him right behind Julius Randle, and I think it's closer than most people might think. I like him a lot. I love his game now, and if he can, you know, improve on that, polish some things up, he could be very, very, very good.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of people do love his upside. He's a definite upside guy, no question about that. Before we get to some of the other, not to be dismissive and say also ran, because I know you wanted to talk about it, but guys who are not getting as much run and mm-hmm. who are either borderline lottery guys or not lottery guys at all, the guy I want to ask you about, because later in the season, Doug McDermott at Creighton, who had just an amazing senior year for Creighton, was really starting to get some run as far as being a serious pro prospect. And, again, mm-hmm. for as much as people do or don't want to talk about it, usually do because it's a sensationalistic thing, the prospect of a white guy, and not a Euro, an actual white American guy who may be a legitimate pro prospect. And he was really starting to get some run later in the year in terms of, by mainstream columnists, actually writing columns like, hey, forget the guy's skin color, he can actually play the game at the next level. Nevertheless, he's still a borderline top 10 guy at most in the minds of many. How do you see his game translating to the next level? Because when I see comparisons to Kyle Korver, and I certainly hope that's not knock on his consistency, because, geez, Kyle Korver, having had him in fantasy basketball leagues, is death. Okay, because on the nights when he's on, he's great, and when the nights when he's not on, he shouldn't even be in the developmental league. What do you think about the comparisons that McDermott is getting to him, the praise that he's getting as a pro prospect, et cetera?
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, it's flat out. We don't have time for me to search for adjectives. Doug McDermott got the initial run because he can shoot the rock, period. He's also big enough to defend other threes, maybe not quick enough. I mean, he's never going to body up face up against a LeBron or a Carmelo Anthony and slide with him on the dribble. But in post-up scenarios, clogging the paint, getting a hand in passing lanes, he's got a knack. And that comes from being the son of a coach. He's got good size. He's got good weight. He's got good ball skills. He's got all these things that come together. And if anybody is trying to just relate to him to just another white guy shooter, they're sadly mistaken. And it's not so much what he has skill-wise that I love so much about him and I think is going to serve him well as an NBA player. It's that he never quits. And here's the problem. A lot of times people watch games to see who wins. Sometimes people watch games to watch a certain player. But rarely do people watch games to view a guy as a prospect. And if you do that, you'll find that you watch certain details that you don't always watch as a fan. And if you go mm-hmm. back, if they replay a game, a Creighton game, before the draft, I urge everybody to do this. Watch McDermott only. Just watch him run around the floor and count the number of times you see him stop, where he puts his hands on his knees or gets out of the way of an isolation or whatever. It never happens. The guy's got a motor like Reggie Miller. He just never stops. He's always in there setting screens and getting moving and getting guys in place. I really think that his tenacity is going to be a huge asset. And if I was going to compare him to anybody, it would absolutely not be Kyle Korver. It would be something like an amalgamation of Dirk Nowitzki that plays an American-style game and the tenacity and motor of a Reggie Miller, who always makes the right decisions. This is another guy that does not make boneheaded plays. So I think it's ridiculous. And if I'm the guy doing the drafting, there's no way on this earth McDermott gets out of the top 10.
Well, that's some great stuff right there. And, again, it just underlines why it's a shame that we are pinched for time here today, because it's gems like that that obviously help make this show what it is. The last couple guys I know you wanted to talk about at least were Shavaz Napier, who I think sort of goes in that ultimate winner category. You've got him pretty high at point guard. Some question about how he rates as a pro prospect, but at the college level you couldn't ask for more. And a couple of guys from Michigan, Glenn Robinson III, small forward, and Nick Stauskas, shooting guard. So you see a couple of swing men and Napier, I guess, as being some of the other more interesting guys to talk about.
Interesting, but not in a good way.
Okay.
I'll be nice and say I like Glenn Robinson. I think that if he goes to the right situation where he's perceived to be at best their third scoring option, I think he can really add a dynamic to a team. And if he's going in the middle to the end of the first round, some decent team is going to get a nice contributor. He has a nice all-around game. He doesn't do anything on a phenomenal level, but he does everything pretty well. He's got a great attitude. Stauskas is one of these guys that I think everyone else is in love with because he can shoot. But how many times have we seen shooters come in the league, whether we're talking about Jimmer Fredette that you mentioned or Trajan Langdon or anybody in the last 10, 15-plus years whose basic thing is, oh, he's a shooter, so what? There were games where he just got shut down because if they put a good defender on him, he can't get free. And I'm not on board with Stauskas that high. I think he's a 25 beyond type player. And Shavaz Napier, I'm sorry to tell people, he's not a starting point guard in the NBA. He's high on the list because this draft class does not have a lot of great point guard prospects. Shavaz may have won, and that was a great ride, but he's not a great Kyrie Irving, Chris Paul-type point guard. And I got to say that with the off-the-field stuff and as often as he opens his mouth to the media, I am very concerned about his attitude.
Quick follow-up on that, because there's a combo guard that I have going at 19 who you don't have anywhere on the horizon.
Ooh.
You would see this, I'm sure, as a huge reach. Jordan Clarkson of Missouri. So when we're talking about guys who can play the point in a very weak point guard draft, he's a guy that should be way up there, but you don't seem that impressed by him.
Well, keep in mind, John, I'm basing all of these projections on sort of their talent in the bottle. I do like him. I like his size. I like the fact that he can play both positions. And skill-wise, he's up there in every category. The question is has he reached his ceiling, or is this one of those guys that has potential to grow? Because if he can grow, NBADraft.net, I think, compared him to what's-his-face, Rookie of the Year this last year. Carter Williams?
Yeah, Carter Williams.
Yeah, if that's the case, hey, bring it on. And I'll go back and I'll look at the tape again. But when I saw him before, he just didn't jump off the screen at me, and that, you know, sometimes can fall through the cracks. But, yeah, if you're basing this on what we're looking at point guard-wise, we can throw him in the mix because there's not a lot of great point guards. Marcus Smart, if he's going to play point, is solid. Exum could be solid. And then after that, you know, Peyton from Louisiana Lafayette. I really like him, but I like him as a player more than I do as a point guard.
So. Well, there's a lot of different angles to talk about that are very interesting with this draft. We'll bring it full circle here with a mention of the Cavs, who have the top pick, and it's funny because you threw out Trajan Langdon there as a guy who is an example of he could shoot the ball but couldn't create his own shot, and what good are you if you can't do that? You know, as Cavs fans, you know, we tend to look back over history. Trajan Langdon, a good example of a shooter who's not worth anything. On the other end of the spectrum, a guy who Cavs fans remember much more fondly about a decade previous to that, Del Curry, who electrified back in the day as a sixth man who unfortunately I think was lost in the expansion draft to Charlotte. Kids, you may know him as Stephon Curry's father, as I really age myself by remembering Del Curry and his actual playing career and how much I enjoyed rooting for him back in the day. Hopefully as much as I will enjoy rooting for Andrew Wiggins and Kyrie Irving hoisting the O'Brien Trophy in the future for the Cleveland Cavaliers, as we get a little bit biased here at the end. But, again, a pleasure breaking this down with you, Jason. There's nobody better to talk this stuff with than our own FDH senior editor Jason Jones. Thank you so much, my man. We will be monitoring the NBA draft. We'll be talking about this subsequently. Thanks for your time. And, again, should be a tremendous draft this year.
Can't wait.